It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and we are on pilgrimage, following in the footsteps of Dorothy Day, founder of the Catholic Worker Movement and the woman who could be the next American saint. Shannon Henry Kleiber is about to visit Mary House, where Dorothy Day fed and housed the poor. So first, let's hear how Day herself described it.
Houses of hospitality are maintained in that way, you see, by the voluntary poverty of those who are participating in the work. Lodging is free, the food is free, people are not questioned, the clothes come in are free. In a cold winter like this last, there have been any number of cases reported by the police of men who are frozen to death, men who have slept in empty buildings. The whole gesture towards trying to provide, trying to go ahead and through voluntary poverty, through a personal sacrifice, this has been the very basic position of the Catholic worker.
So Mary House is a bustling place. People are serving and eating food, coming in and out of their rooms, chatting and catching up. Every evening, there's a community gathering to say prayers called Vespers together.
I remember the first day that she came, that I met her. I didn't meet her right away.
This is Jane Salmon, a longtime Catholic worker volunteer. She's lived in Mary House for many years.
She comes through the door looking very elegant, and like a lot of young people, I suppose I thought she was going to be, hello, girl, hello, daughter, you know, like this older person's cliche-driven voice. And she was as clear and commanding as one could be. And I was literally mopping the floor. And I'm like that sign, Jesus is coming, look busy. Dorothy is coming, I'm mopping away on the floor. And so I went up to her. I can't say who said what first, but I said, hello, my name's Jane Salmon. She wanted to know immediately where I was from, and then she wanted to know if I knew the Cleveland folks, the people that were out at the Catholic Worker. I said, well, I don't know, I said, but we do have a picture of my dad in front of the Blessed Martin de Porres house in Cleveland. And she said, you're second generation Catholic worker. Is what she said. It was sweet, right? The women who were volunteers, none of us was a paid employee. And we lived on a common dorm together in one room with a lot of people who stayed half the night up. And some of the women who lived on that floor, their lives were people who were out on the street. The 60s were the 60s, but not to us yet. There was so much conflict, and there were people that were not all on board with the Catholic thing. Some people wanted to do things that weren't what we would call nonviolent response to Vietnam. And then when we got there in this early 70s, she seemed to like the fact that we had some Catholic roots, as you said. And when I said that, I said, oh, we must seem really kind, let my head down. Kind of boring to you. She says, you do not know how happy you people make me. I'll always remember that. I'll always remember, you do not know how happy you people make me. You know?
One of Day's traits was connecting and influencing people wherever she went in her Catholic worker community. But she also had her own biological family. Her daughter Tamar and 9 grandchildren. Martha Hennessy is one of them.
Martha, I wanted to go back to Mary House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mary House is this place where people who really, you know, they're experiencing poverty, they're experiencing mental illness. It is in some ways a place you might not expect there to be so much beauty and fun. How does that work?
How does it work? Yes. Well, I call it the agony and the ecstasy. How could Dorothy have done this for 50 years without experiencing joy, without seeing the beauty, everyday beauty? In our world today, in, you know, the Lower East Side, where our lives are completely dictated by this, what Dorothy called the lousy, rotten system of capitalism and the church's complicity in it. Resistance to what's wrong and what's evil is a challenge, but also a joy to participate in. And of course, none of us can do it, first of all, without God, and second of all, without each other. So we cannot separate our faith from our works.
How long were you in prison for? Can you tell me what you were arrested for? And these experiences that you have in your peaceful protesting also seem so inspired by Dorothy.
Yes, I would say all aspects of my life have been interwoven with Dorothy. And re-entering Mary House community was certainly through these anti-war actions. So myself and six other Catholics, many of them Catholic workers, we walked onto Kings Bay Naval Base, which houses the Trident nuclear submarine fleet on the East Coast. We prayed, we poured our blood, we symbolically hammered on these weapons of mass destruction. We waited to be arrested. I was given a 10-month prison sentence, and I spent over a year with an ankle monitor and house arrests and curfew, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Dorothy wrote an essay in September of 1945 called We Go on Record, the Catholic Worker Response to Hiroshima. So I understood what these weapons were about from the get-go. And these weapons were being tested atmospherically when I was in utero and when I was born in the mid-1950s. And so it is in my bones, literally, and it's embedded in my psyche and my spirituality. This is what Dorothy handed me. Are you going to stand up and speak against this abomination against God's creation? We're not created to destroy. We're created to love.
Tell me about your childhood growing up. So you are her granddaughter. You really knew her well. You are family. Can you remember the first time, your first memory of your grandmother?
I was a three-year-old, and I was sitting on her lap, and she was either just arriving or getting ready to leave. She was a great storyteller. I had my ear on her chest, and her voice was resonating, and it was my first memory of her, and also of feeling the presence of God. I mean, it took me years to process that memory and what it meant, but that was my first memory of her.
That's beautiful. What did you call her?
Granny.
Granny.
We left Jeff upstairs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're just running around.
So, Deirdre, tell me where we're going here.
We're going up to Dorothy's room in here in Mary House.
This is where she lived during her last years.
So here, and Jeff will be able to explain a lot more.
Oh, hi.
Hi, hello.
Hi, I'm Shannon.
Yes.
Oh, wow, so this was Dorothy's room.
This was her room.
So yeah, actually, if you could start with how you knew Dorothy.
Oh, first time I met Dorothy, I came to New York in 1974 for the summer.
This is Father Jeffrey Ganoos.
With some strong negotiations with superiors, got permission to be a chaplain here.
Okay.
I do recall Dorothy said to me, Father, your being assigned here is the affirmation of my life. She was officially recognized by the church.
Yes.
So, it was very touching. So there's several volunteers, but they asked me to stay in this building because down the block were Hell's Angels, and they were not very friendly. And they had a nasty habit at about 3 a.m., a whole contention. They would purposely stop in front of Mary House and gun their motorcycles. They were very obnoxious. I said, Dorothy, they wake me up every night, and how do you sleep? And she said, I'm deaf in one ear and I sleep on the good ear.
Did she die in this room?
Yes, yeah, and Tamar was with her, her daughter. Yeah, that week, it was Thanksgiving week. Dorothy was getting weaker, but there was no imminent sense that she would pass away.
I mean, it's pretty powerful to be in this room where she died.
Yeah.
I just, yeah, I'm looking around. There, these were her books, right?
Yes.
She was a great reader, but she also especially loved the Russian writers, Dostoevsky.
George Orwell, and there's this, a quote from Peter Morin. The future will be different if we make the present different. I imagine she died right here.
In the bed.
She died right there. Wow.
Yeah.
This is her desk.
Uh-huh.
Are these her postcards?
Oh, what were these? I don't know. She must have collected these.
Right.
That's kind of an incredible collection of her. These were her postcards that
she was a great.
She hasn't sent yet.
Right. She hadn't sent yet.
Wow.
But yes, I would bring Dorothy when she couldn't come down for Mass. I would bring communion to her here.
Right.
And then sometimes in the evening, later evening, one of us would come to make sure she took her medications. Sometimes she would sit and we would have a glass of sherry together.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yes.
What would you talk about?
Oh, well, again, she would be telling stories or reminiscing, but those were sweet times. The wake was here, and so there are people lined up on the street, and Abby Hoffman came to the wake, and he quipped that Dorothy was the first hippie. And then we had the prayer service. That was on Monday, and then Tuesday was the funeral at the church. It's now torn down on 2nd Avenue there.
You knew her so well, and you had probably given funeral homilies before, but
right.
what was it like to create that homily for Dorothy Day's funeral?
Well, it was, I have to admit, rather humbling and profound. But I preached on a line from John, and the whole theme in the homily was it was all about truth, and once she converted, she was set on that Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. And I pointed out that in her life she tried to incarnate that. The burial was out on Staten Island Resurrection Cemetery. And one curious thing, before kind of her conversion, she was friends with Eugene O'Neill, and he could recite Francis Thompson's poem, The Hound of Heaven. But at the cemetery that day, as we were placing her body in the earth, three greyhound dogs showed up and were kind of jumping and dancing around.
Wow.
I even said to a fellow Dominican colleague, look at that, the hounds of heaven are there.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have tears in your eyes. It's really touching to...
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to make it worse. But no, it's just touching because you're remembering that so clearly, and she was such a good friend to you. And how do you think of her as your friend and a saint?
Well, no, my feeling of the relationship with her was just a dear, loving person. Because the last time I brought her communion was about maybe 5 or 6 days before she passed away. She was in bed and she was weak. And this were her last words. Father, it takes so long to die. I mean, that to me was terribly profound. And it was, I think in her soul, she had done what she had done. And it was time to go.
Was there a moment when you realized that Granny was important to other people other than your family?
Yeah. I had to come to the understanding that she belonged to the world. She didn't just belong to us.
Is it hard to share her with the world?
Yeah, of course. I think when it came to going to her funeral when I was 25, that was super hard.
Why?
Well, because she was part of this community that was very big, very broad, and I was standing in line at her wake at Mary House, and the woman in front of me, who I have no idea to this day who she was, she kissed Dorothy on the lips, and that was really hard for me. You know, This was my grandmother, this is what this stranger was doing. With her body. I don't know how to explain it. It's public life and it's a private life.